This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. Who hasn't seen at least a clip of the video for Gangnam Style?
Open Gangnam Style! Gangnam Style!
It is an easy dance to mimic. The video has horses, fake snow, dancing girls, and the enigmatic Psy in wingtips and a blue tux. Gangnam Style was the first video to rack up a billion hits on YouTube and part of the calculated strategy of Hallyu, or the influence and export of South Korean pop culture onto the global landscape. Korean movies, K-pop music acts, games, and TV shows in particular are proliferating throughout the global South and could be Korea's gateway to becoming an international superpower, even by American standards. Yuni Hong is author of The Birth of Korean Cool, How One Nation is Conquering the World Through Pop Culture. Yuni Hong, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you, Virginia. I'm happy to be here.
South Korea, just 50 years ago, you describe as having a GDP lower than Ghana and even North Korea. Now it's the 15th largest economy in the world. How did it come from so far behind so quickly?
Yes, well, basically a lot of developing countries currently are trying to figure out this very thing. The short answer is that Korea is what I describe as the only capitalist liberal democracy on earth that runs like a command economy. What do I mean by that?
Yes.
I mean that since the very beginning, the government and its private industry have worked closely in cooperation on basically every major decision in order to advance the economy. And this has extended even to the current somewhat crazy-sounding project of making Korea the world's top exporter of popular culture.
Well, what you describe in the book is this strategy very much by design, a government-led initiative to do no less than dominate developing world markets in pop culture. How? Can you bring us through the strategy?
Yes. I would say, first of all, to preface this, I think everyone, including Korea, realizes that they are not going to replace the United States as the main exporter of pop culture, but they are probably going to replace its monopoly on world pop culture. And what I mean by that is that Korea is going after markets that the United States does not really care about, either because they're too poor, like Paraguay or Zimbabwe, or because they consider America to be a harbinger of sin, like the part of the world that's been taken over by Islamist fundamentalism. A lot of American programming that used to be popular in places like Iran, maybe in the 60s or 70s, is now either outright illegal or can only be shown after midnight. And Korea makes these dramas, by contrast, that are very chaste. There's usually no kissing until episode 10. And this is a perfect fit for the Arab market. And in fact, in Iran, there's a show that has taken 80% of viewership, which is called My Love from Another Star. It's actually one of the most famous Korean dramas worldwide. It's about an alien from outer space who came to Korea in the 17th century. And in the 21st century, he falls in love with an actress. And if they kiss in episode 10, but he almost dies. And so it's very much this old-fashioned, almost Jane Austen throwback. And this works really, really well in a lot of world markets.
And you describe Korean diplomats actually smuggling tapes of television programs to Hong Kong, for example. The Korean government paying to have shows dubbed into Spanish. It's so interesting, given the huge strides that Korea's made in technology and business and education, that making a choice of Korean pop culture, where does that stack up in the priorities for Korea as a country?
Right now, it's the number one priority, actually. It's the government's stated policy.
So can we draw a line directly from government ministry? In fact, there was a ministry created for this purposes to Psy, for example?
Psy is a very strange instance of the exception proving the rule. On the one hand, nobody in Korea, I should say, was surprised that it was a Korean video that got a billion hits on YouTube. However, everyone was surprised that it was this particular artist. And I say that because Psy is considered an outlier. He did not go through the K-pop factory system. He writes his own songs, which is extremely unusual. He has the wrong look. He's a little too old. And he makes fun of things that Korea thinks are kind of sacred. And so it was very much an in spite of thing. The Korean entertainment industry was grooming the more attractive conventional bands like Girls' Generation and Big Bang. Psy came out of nowhere. I don't think even he knows why he was the shot heard around the world.
Yeah, and K-pop, I guess, to just describe those bands further, sort of boy band, you know, some of them under multi-year, 12-year development contracts to groom these kind of stars for the system. This strategy would be impossible without the concept of Han, if I'm saying that properly.
Yes.
Han is what you introduce us to as driving the country. Now, what does that mean to you? What is Han?
Han is a culturally specific form of anger, vengeance, wrath that can make you so upset that you could actually literally die from it. And this is a disease that appears in the DSM manual, which is the Bible for the Psychiatric Institute. It's like dying of a broken heart, except you're dying of of unfulfilled vengeance. And by definition, only Korean people can have it. I like to describe it as the opposite of karma, because whereas karma can be worked off from one lifetime to the other, Han actually only accumulates. So you inherit the rage of millennia of the generations from the minute that you're born. This has a lot to do with influencing the Korean work ethic, their drive, their desire to beat Japan in the economic wars was a huge motivator because they're ancient rivals. And it's one of the most enduring and mysterious mutual animosities in the modern world, actually. And I don't know if this is true in general, but for Korea, their wrath actually keeps them alive. It's what they live for, which makes them stronger. And in fact, Ian Fleming in his James Bond series said, Koreans are the cruelest race, as a way of explaining why he had Oddjob as his manservant.
Well, which would make a lot of people roll their eyes, but you said reading it as a kid felt somehow vindicated, like they got it right.
No, exactly. I was just wondering, wow, did he spend time in Korea? How did he know that? Because that was something that I really observed, is that I've never seen so many random fistfights between, you know, people, you know, dressed in nice three-piece suits, you know, where it's considered socially acceptable to just have enemies. And where nobody, you know, will just tell you to let things go.
We're talking about the South Korean soul, I guess, and also its strategy for global domination through pop culture. From Kimchi to Gangnam Style, what it's doing and how it's working is the subject of Yuni Hong's book, The Birth of Korean Cool, How One Nation is Conquering the World Through Pop Culture. For the book, you spoke to Lee Moon-won, one of Korea's most influential pop critics. He tells you that Koreans are not good at creativity. This is maybe a stereotype we've heard before. Koreans don't innovate, they copy. So why have filmmakers like Park Chan-wook and musicians like Psy, for example, been able to cross over?
Yes, I would say that of all of the pop culture exports, film is the one that is the least profitable for precisely the reasons that you mentioned. They're highly artistic, which is why the French love Korean film. They're also violent and they lack the chastity that it described in the Korean dramas. And it's basically sort of the one area where if you're genuinely creative and not that commercially oriented, you will probably enter film. I think that Koreans are very philosophical and creative. But I think the point that the culture critic was trying to make is that what the secret behind Korean success in pop culture is that they're extremely good at packaging. So, for example, your average K-pop song, the song itself will have been, usually it comes from Sweden. The studios buy Swedish songs by the thousands. The choreography might be done by an American. And it's all just sort of assembled, but the assembly itself does require creativity. So I would, in that sense, qualify the culture critic statement. The way that it's packaged is very plug-and-play. In the case of literal packaging, one of the reasons Korean music does so well is that they're actually making CDs that can cost $150 because they come with all these bells and whistles. And that's why they've conquered the Japanese market even more than American music has, because for some reason, Japan really buys a lot of CDs. It goes against the trend of the rest of the world. Mm. So it's sort of an obvious marriage of demand and supply.
It's not just in Asia and South America that Hallyu is working. It's also penetrating the markets in France, for example. Why is it that it's not hitting it big in America?
So I think the dirty secret of the Korean wave is that they kind of don't really care if they get the American market, because in the state the world is in now, you can actually do really, really well without capturing the American market. They're not the only ones with money anymore.
Yuni Hong, I want to thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Okay. Thank you, Virginia. It's a pleasure.
Yuni Hong, author of The Birth of South Korean Cool, How One Nation is Conquering the World Through Pop Culture.